income is a much lighter solution. Bear in mind, though, that air is a little bit heavier than you think, Barry. Before you compress the air is 2.5 pounds per cubic meter is the mass of air at normal temperature, sea level, normal pressure. And so if I compressed it, 10 or 20 times, I'm into 22 or 44 pounds of air in the tank. But still, compared to batteries, that seems awfully light.
Well, Dick, there's one more thing. The further you go, the lighter the tank gets. So you're getting a return for having traveled that distance. It's just like taking a rocket and going off the ground. The further you go, the less rocket fuel you carry.
See if you can bring up Tesla automobile.
Okay. There was an electric automobile way back in the 20s, which I don't think people had a requirement for 200 miles of range in those days, so they were quite happy with the car. And you're going to give us a couple more words and I pass it over to you, Mel. I like the idea that it gets lighter as it goes, whereas the battery does not. I mean, we had a discussion here a while ago about a man thinking that you take a D-size alkaline battery. When it's brand new, it'll bounce off a concrete floor, and when it's consumed, you throw it down to the floor and it doesn't bounce anymore. He thought the difference was the weight of the electrons involved, enclosed, when it's fully charged. In reality, in the case of the alkaline battery being consumed, the outer case becomes thinner because you're eating away those metals, very similar to what happened with the old-fashioned dry cells of 40 years ago. When you completely consume one of those, the outer zinc can develop holes, and the magnesium dioxide started leaking out, and you saw it was inside that battery real fast. So I think something similar is happening with alkaline. The amazing thing with a capacitor or a battery is that the number of electrons in there, when the capacitor or the battery is fully charged, versus the number of electrons that's in there when the capacitor or the battery is fully discharged, is the exact same number of electrons. So just in a different place. A battery or a charged capacitor simply pumps electrons, and for every electron that comes out of the negative lead, exactly one electron goes into the positive lead. Mother Nature forces extreme balance in those situations. Remember the situation I gave as an example of the 3-foot-long wide copper lead that goes between your battery and the starter motor. If Mother Nature would allow you to drain those electrons out of that chunk of copper, you would get 200 amperes for 4 hours. She won't let you do that. It's a great big pipeline. And every time one electron jumps out of that cable into your starter motor, one jumps out of the battery into the cable. And they stay balanced. So I guess you would like to start off with an air-compressed car, powered car, charged with Con Ed or Loco, and eventually charge that with solar voltaics, wind, and all the other kinds of renewables. And yes, we certainly have to make a commitment to renewables, because the more we're dependent on foreign oil, the more vulnerable we are. We are clear and simple. I think a reasonably large factor as to why we have lost 3,000 and some odd American lives in Iraq is partially because of the protection of the flow of oil. N2MB, K2RIW.
Yeah, that was my next point. I think compressed air, we wouldn't have to go to war over it, and I think that's pretty good. You should look a little further down Google and find French to unveil air-powered car. Now that's a beauty. They got pictures of it. It's a green colored car, and it's got quite a bit going for it. The nice part about this is you could, the changeover of the technology can be done by a station by station basis. I mean, any station can choose to compress the air however they choose to do it. So it isn't like you've got to buy oil and you got to sell gasoline. You don't have to do that. The throughway, a station on the throughway, which might be in a windy place, to say, okay, let's let's do this with as much wind power as we can, and if we run out of wind power today, we use electricity, you know, something like that. There's a hell of a lot going for this engine. The French seem to be picking up on it. Europe, Japan, China, they're looking into it, and I don't know why we're not, Dick.
K2KY.
Go ahead, Bill.
Okay, there's a new startup company, and he took the name Tesla, or Nikola Tesla is giving him the honor. He's a company that's doing some kind of development for NASA, and as a side business, they started up doing some investigation and building an electric car by some new battery technique or whatever he's developed. And now he's got he's got a sports car right now that, it'll do 120 miles an hour, 0 to 60 in 5 seconds and all. I only saw part of it. And it's, like I can say, it's a whole new battery type of technology that he's applying. And the company, I don't remember the name of it, you know, the primary company, but I can say I know he was mentioning that they're doing some development for NASA. But the company now is calling it Tesla Automobiles, TESLA. He's taking orders, building this sports car, this electric sports car, that goes 200 miles on one charge, and so far, like he says right now, $100,000, but he hopes in the next couple of years to start coming out with mid-range cars and all based on this new technology that he worked on. But I can say, if you see if you can bring up the name Tesla Automobiles, Dick, over.
And here we go. Go ahead, Rich. Okay, you know, apropos to this, there's a lot of things going on that you don't hear about. The other night I was listening on 75 meters to a W8 in Ohio, and it was telling somebody that in 1976, he disconnected from the power company. He has solar panels on his heating tower. He uses the solar panels to charge batteries and uses an inverter to power the house. He doesn't have like 100 amp service. He's got 30 amp service. But he said he hasn't used commercial electricity since 1976.
Yeah, but it said he's used oil to heat the place.
I don't know. He did say, Barry, that on cloudy days, when it's cloudy for a period of time, he uses gas lamps. Go ahead, Dick.
Yeah, interesting. What I like about the compressed air car, Barry, that you almost do not need anything like a transmission. If you've got the equivalent of a steam engine at each one of the wheels, then the pressure of the compressed air at each wheel automatically gives you a nearly constant force, nearly constant torque at that wheel, which implies that the compressed air car would have a nearly constant acceleration. That's a very slight disadvantage compared to a car with a transmission where you use low gears and you're moving slow and high gears and you're moving fast, which means you end up with a little faster acceleration when you're moving slow. But except for that slight disadvantage, it's a drastically decreased mechanical complication. By comparison, if I had an electric motor at each wheel, you cannot directly connect the electric motor to a battery. Stalled rotor current will be fierce and you'll be making a lot of heat in the motor.
Do you mean to use a hysteresis type motor?
Let me think now. Hysteresis type motor. I think the answer is yes. To my knowledge, if you want maximum efficiency out of an electric motor, there's an ideal voltage you apply to it for each specific number of RPM you're getting out of it. And so as long as you're using some kind of a variable voltage inverter, step-up, step-down inverter, you can meet that requirement. But now, electronically, you've created a transmission. Whereas with compressed gas going into the equivalent of a steam engine, there is no impedance mismatch, so to speak. In other words, whatever pressure of the air going into the steam engine gives you a certain amount of force at the wheel, and you're getting that, not counting friction, you're getting that at 100% efficiency. And with an electric generator motor set, you only get that when the voltages match. And when the voltages mismatch, a lot of excess current flows, which gives you a lot of excess IR drop within the windings of the motor, which represents the power loss. So there's something to be said for having a compressor at each wheel, so when you're braking, it's compressing, and you're running the compressor backwards when you want power. And except for friction, and except for replacing those sliding seals occasionally, that's an extremely efficient system. A simple little pipe going to the four wheels, a simple set of controls, electronically actuated at the four wheels as to whether or not you want power or braking. And yes, there's a backup set of disc brakes when you want to do a panic stop, but most of the time, if you're smart, you don't use those. I see a lot of advantage in four compressors that can run forward or backwards, so to speak, at each wheel, and the compressed air tank in between, and it's a very simple system. How about you, Barry?
Okay, the only things, of course, that we have to consider here is leave our automobiles at night and various things like that, and we have lots of electronics in our cars for various reasons. So you're going to have to produce electricity for something. You're saying don't use the electricity to run the car, just produce some electricity to run the electronics. Maybe that's the good way to go. I think it needs a little research, but I think it's really something. First of all, it's an extremely safe automobile. The only danger you might have here is a tank exploding under extreme conditions. They have provided for that to some degree by using these polycarbonate tanks. They say that they don't, to use a name of a guy, no shrapnel. The tank would probably just split and allow the gas to escape. That could be dangerous, by the way. It's under a lot of pressure. It's almost a liquid. So I think that escaping air could be dangerous, but hey, you know, everything's got its drawbacks. Nothing's perfect, you know?
So there's a way around that. Two ways around the two things you just mentioned. Number one, everything that NASA does and everything that most airlines do have APUs, auxiliary power units. So there's a very separate turbine, in the case of NASA and your airliner, which is using whatever the raw source of power is, usually petroleum, and that runs a separate motor generator, which generates the electricity to run the electrical equipment. And the air-powered car could have that, and maybe you could run that on a battery. I like the idea of the second thing I'm going to mention now, and that is when you fly your airliner, the passenger compartment is pressurized. For the most part, I think the baggage compartment may not be pressurized. There, I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether or not there may be some airliners where the baggage compartment is not pressurized. Okay. By a similar philosophy, I would like to design the automobile such that you have the equivalent of a pressurized cabin where the human beings reside. Outside of that pressure vessel is the open air vessel where the compressed air tanks are located, so that in the worst case, when you have a rupture of the compressed air tank and the air comes running out of there very rapidly, it is outside of the pressure vessel that contains you, and therefore it doesn't burst your eardrums. Back to you, Barry.
Okay, now, I'm going to give this back to you. I don't want to dwell on this too much, but I think it's a great idea to bring it up. I really do. I'm concerned about something else. If you get a split in a tank like that, would that constitute like a rocket engine? I mean, could that thing, because this is going to be releasing that air for a long time.
There are stories about people who take a CO2 container and drop it off the back of a truck when the safety device is not properly attached, where you shear off the valve mechanism, and now the CO2 comes running out of the back of this great big long tank.
Dick, I once saw that happen.
Tell me what it looked like and what it is here.
It was scary as hell. It was in a parking lot, a sandy parking lot. I think the guy deliberately hacked off the end of that compressed air tank with a sledgehammer. I'm not sure. But what I remember seeing was that tank flying around that parking lot, banging off the fences and the walls, and that guy scared to death for quite a while.
Wow. So you're telling me the CO2 came running out of there for what, 20 seconds or so?
Maybe a half a minute, yeah. It was a long, I mean, I don't remember. It seemed like forever. When I saw this, I just couldn't believe my eyes. The guy was scared to death. This tank was flying all over the place.
How big was that tank?
Oxygen bottle, that did quite a bit of damage.
That tank probably weighs, what, 100 pounds? And it was probably traveling 50 or 80 miles an hour? Can you imagine the damage that can do when it hits things?
Yeah, that was exactly what I was thinking with these pressurized tanks in the cars. I mean, there's always a problem. There's always some kind of technology that you got to solve. This surely will be an area where people are going to say, what happens when the tank breaks? I'm not sure. Remember, it's attached to a fairly heavy vehicle. It may not matter.
Deck, KUY.
Okay, I've got a solution to that. Go ahead, Mel.
Yeah, once at the airport, a oxygen bottle, you know, that they're using, acetylene and oxygen, you know, one of the big bottles that they use with the torch. Tank the bottle stands, what, about 4 feet tall, turned over. Dick, it took off and went across, I don't know how far it traveled. I think they said it traveled as much as almost a quarter of a mile, I believe. It went through, I think, two walls over.
Wow, can that do damage? Now, the tank itself, there's all kinds of straps you can put around it to tie it down to the vehicle so that it's not going to go flying independently. And that's not an expensive mechanism. You can also build a containment vessel around it. Consider what happens in the rotary turbine of every single jet engine on every airplane. The tip rotor speed on all of those compressor stages and all those turbine stages, the tip speed is very close to the speed of sound, close to 700 miles an hour. All of those blades, the tip speed, are moving that fast. They have a rather strong titanium or steel shell on the outside of the jet engine, which is called the containment vessel. And so that, in the worst case, failure of the engine, when all those blades are breaking up and flying out of there, they, in theory, do not have the ability to pierce the containment vessel and therefore pierce the side of the aircraft and go through human beings. And so, with very rare exception, those containment vessels do a very good job. I am guessing that they contribute 1% extra mass to the weight of the airplane, and it's an awfully good investment. So I see the possibility of creating a containment vessel around these compressed air tanks. That combined with enough straps around them so that they can't fly, I think you can get 99% protection if you do a good design job. What do you think, Barry?
It may not be all that necessary. If you put it under the vehicle, you know, a lot of things you could do. And also, with these polycarbonate tanks, you don't necessarily have to be round. It's possible they could take on other shapes, so they could become part of the vehicle. You know, there's a lot of things available here. The French model of this says they go from 200 kilometers and approximately 65 miles an hour. That's not bad.
That's a nice range. Out of a modern-day, well-tuned, petroleum-powered automobile, you get 400 and some odd miles of range from full tank to fully empty tank. That's what I'm getting these days on my Toyota. Is it Camry? I think it's a 1999 Toyota. I think it's Camry. I'm not positive. And the trip odometer goes to something like 430 miles when I go pretty close to running on fumes to starting off very full. And if I had to sacrifice a little bit of that and go down to 200 miles of range, I would tolerate that. When I start getting down to the 100-mile range, where every couple days I've got to refuel,
that's becoming a pain. So 200 is sort of the threshold beyond which I think it's a pretty viable vehicle, and below that I'm a little bit annoyed. Is your threshold degree somewhat close to that, Barry?
Well, I think now when these things are starting out, you're going to have short ranges. But I believe if you give this a few years, I'm sure the engineers will come up with ways to make the range longer. I mean, I think I could. Now, I don't know how much a euro is in American dollars, but they're saying in Europe, in France, to fill up the tank at a filling station, this air-compressed tank, they estimate that it will cost about 1.5 euros to fill the tank. What is that in real money?
I think we're running something like 1.6 euros, $1.6 per euro. You're talking about $3 or $4. I just filled up my tank yesterday, and it took $53 to do it, and I used the lowest price gas I could get a hold of. We're talking about some awful big differences here, Barry.
Yeah, and we don't have to go overseas to get it. Air is everywhere. They also claim that if you run out of luck, you can pull into any place where there's electricity, and it'll take you 4 hours to fill this thing up with a built-in pump. That's if things go terribly wrong. So, I mean, you know, and I really believe if this was part of our infrastructure, if everybody had one of these, you got to believe it would have more range. It'd probably figure out ways to make it run a little more efficiently, as, for instance, using braking power to purge the tanks. There's a lot of things you could do. Maybe a solar panel on the roof to slowly pump it. You know, I'm just thinking here. The ideas are endless with this, and I can't imagine why we're not embracing this one. This really almost sounds too good to be true, I'm telling you.
Right now, summertime is coming. The salt mine that I go to most frequently parks 1,000 automobiles on a couple of acres of asphalt. That asphalt on a hot summer day runs very hot. Everybody would love to get to the salt mine soon enough so that you can park your automobile under the very few trees that are there, so your car will be in the shade as opposed to cooking all day long. If over that parking lot there's a whole bunch of these little stalls that you park your car into, it and the top of the stall has got a solar voltaic, now your car is in the shade and it's storing tremendous amounts of electrical energy. And what a beautiful mix that would be. Boy, I wish someday we could start doing that, Barry.
Yeah, I think we also want to consider the ideas of using heat to create electricity, or heat to pump up an engine, like, you know, to run a pump or something like that. Not just solar. There's a lot of other things going on out there.
I think you two guys ought to get together and even develop the NATO forest or a forest NATO car.
Don't laugh. You know, Microsoft is pretty rich because he teamed up with a guy when things look like they were in their beginning stages. That ain't so crazy, Richard.